So we're beginning to wind down. It's been a long time, but I think so much life in the room that it's good to continue. Cheryl always used to want us all to be non-competitive and sort of caring, and she'd speak to Michael and me about this, and would often say that Michael was non-competitive. But you know, the first time I actually had dinner with Michael was in a restaurant in Wellington, and Cheryl was there too, and he'd come over to the first family therapy conference we'd had in New Zealand, which was in Wellington. And we went to a restaurant after that, and we both ordered curry. It was a curry house. And he ordered some curry, and I ordered some curry. And he then asked for his plate to be sent back so he could have hotter curry. So I sent my plate back and asked for hotter curry. So when he got his next lot of hotter curry, he said, "Oh, this is not hot enough. Could I have some hotter curry still, please?" So I sent mine back to get hotter curry still. And honestly, this is a true story. 6 or 7 times. My mouth was just about on fire, but there was no way either of us were going to give up. One of the other stories is just, there haven't been a lot of flying stories, but you know, like he just loved flying so much. And he took us, he'd often ask, "Look, is there somewhere I can take you to? You know, when you come over, if you get a few extra days, is there somewhere we can take you to?" Well, I'm quite interested in wine, you see. And so I said, "Well, why don't you take us to Kunawara?" And he said, "That's a great idea. Yeah, let's go." So he prepared all the maps and things you've got to do when you're doing these things. And it was Rolf Sundet from Norway. He's a really good buddy of ours. And Wally and I. And we went up with Michael. So we got in there this morning. And we flew to Kunawara. You know, it was all that sort of stuff you've got to do. You know, all the sort of stuff. And we did all that. And he's... nothing, no worry to him, but I thought we were going to dive at one stage. But anyway, we're going there, and we come to the vineyards, and of course they're all in rows, and there's a tiny airstrip, but we couldn't see it, and we were flying round and round and round looking for this airstrip, and we think we'd see it, but it was just another row of vines because they're so symmetrical. And Michael said, "Well, look, we've got to find this because we're going to run out of fuel soon, you see." So we were all, our eyes were out, you know, looking for it, and he'd fly in low. We said, "Michael, get up low." They'd fly in low. In the end, he must have seen it, but he didn't let on. So he said, "Look, I think we'll just go here," and he went straight in. And you know, I think the vines are very precious, you see, and the grapes of Kunawara are something that I would get close to worshipping. So he said, I said, "Michael, don't! The grapes, Michael!" And he said, "Don't worry, Charles," he went straight down, and he found the airstrip and just went straight onto it. And he was clearly just trying to rough me up, you know. There were so many times and so many stories, and people have shared good things. The one point I think that hasn't been said, but I'm sure you all know, is, or perhaps it's been said in different other ways, is that the thing that I loved about his work was the way he always looked at for the exception to the problem. So that when people are stuck in, I always think this is the hardest thing in therapy, when people are stuck and they're sort of in maligned positions, and he would just help people find times when the opposite was the case. And it always is the case in people's lives, because we have these diverse events and experiences. And he would take that little bit of hope and that little bit of success, and it would build, you know, it would be reauthored into sort of liberating hope. And I always think that, you know, therapy is a sort of a continuum from depression to hope. And he created such enormous hope whereby people really believed themselves, and that was the essence of social justice in his work. Now, I just want to read 2 poems. There's been, I mean, this year has been a sort of sad year with various deaths. You know, we've talked about Michael and Flora, and of course the deaths of John and Ram in California a bit earlier. But in New Zealand, we lost, you know, one of our great figureheads, a guy called Sir Edmund Hillary, who you probably heard of. You know, he climbed Everest and was very famous for that. And there was another great guy who was a poet, a Māori poet, and he died in January. His name was Honi Tufari. And I want to read two of his poems. Michael always loved it when we shared the cultural things from New Zealand. He loved Māori things. He used to spend lots of time with Wally and with Flora. And I know he loved these poems. I want to read just a funny, silly poem, because I know he'd just crack up and really enjoy it and ask for it to be read again. And then I want to read a serious poem about it. The funny, silly poem is called Granddaughter Polly Peaches. And if you can imagine, Honi Tufari is a senior guy, what we call a kaumātua, a senior Māori elder. But he's always been a hard case of a guy, you know, he gets interviewed on the radio, he's very funny, and he always often swears a lot in places where you wouldn't normally do it, but he does it in a very funny way, in a very light-hearted way. And he's talking here about his granddaughter, who continually wants to sit on his knees, and his legs are tired and sore, and he just wants her to go away, you know, just she wants to come back, and so this is the conversation that goes on. There's no time between now and my transition to say goodbye to you. Goodbye, waste of time. There's not enough room left on the upturned butterbox for your impetuous body to come crashing alongside. Oh, you'll damn me forever for being kingly and remote and for not granting you a special audience. No. No, you may not sit on my knees. You don't know how swiftly they grow numb when blood flow is cut off. It's good out here in the sun, but there is special need for me to concentrate on each cell and tube of me. Listen to them burble and squeak and sigh, all systems go or just going. Thanks. And soon, soon, I shall be as deaf as a stone to all but the hallelujah voices of starched, whitened angels. Swingin', abide with me, with a tasty backup by old Satchmo Louis Armstrong. White handkerchief, mute and horn, and when those saints come stompin' in, well, I ask you, now be a good child and piss off, will ya? Piss off yourself, Gwandud. I just know that sort of thing would tickle Michael. The other poem he wrote, one of his very famous poems and a whole series of poems he wrote, is called No Ordinary Sun. And it's about a tree that's dying, or dead, you could look at it both ways. And it's just that it's lost its life, but it still echoes as something really special. And I thought it was appropriate. It's the poem I've really thought around Michael. No Ordinary Sun. Tree, let your arms fall. Raise them not sharply in supplication to the bright and hallowed cloud. Let your arms lack toughness and resilience, for this is no mere axe to blunt, nor fire to smother. Your sap shall not rise again to the moon's pull. No more incline a differential head to the wind's talk, or stir to the tickle of coursing rain. Your former shagginess shall not be wreathed with the delightful flight of birds, nor shield, nor cool the ardour of the unheeding lovers from the monstrous sun. Tree, let your naked arms fall, nor extend vain entreaties to the radiant ball. This is no gallant moonshine flash, no dashing trade wind blast. The fading green of your magic emanations shall not make pure again these polluted skies, for this is no ordinary sun. O tree, in the shadowless mountains, in the white plains, and the drab sea floor, your end at last is written. We, at the family centre, actually, we need Cheryl here. She disappeared.
She's just going to come back.
She's coming back. At the family centre, wanted on this occasion to make a presentation. Dhamma Center. And this seemed a really appropriate time to do it because of the sort of relationship that Cheryl spoke about. And we wanted to do it with a piece of art. We've exchanged gifts over the years for all sorts of things. This particular piece comes from the soil of Aotearoa. It's a piece of pottery from a guy called Brian Garside. David and Cheryl and Michael, they've often stayed in our house, and our house is full of Garside and other artists. And we wanted to present it at this time because, you know, when people die, they go to the ground. And the pots come from the ground and yet are sort of re-enlivened in a new sense. And so in that sense, they bring new life. So, on behalf of us all at the Family Centre, I think we've got a team organised, haven't we?
Yes. Where's Barb?
Where's Barb? She just went inside about 1 second ago. I think she might be in the bathroom.
There we go.
Shall we make a scene about being in the bathroom? Oh, when Charles mentioned this, I said I thought it'd be lovely that rather than give it to me, that it be given to everybody who currently works at Dulwich in any capacity, and all of the extended faculty, and everybody who has ever worked at Dulwich who's here at the moment. So maybe we can all come.
All you got, all up on the stage. Show your best side, please. Come, bump up your butt.
This is sort of academy from the Family Centre. Okay. Okay, so this is on behalf of all of us, in memory of Mike. Yeah.